You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Mm-hmm. Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Jada Lucas.
And I'm Michael Glab. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, December 4th, 2017.
Kinds of fur or straw or very rough sort of costumes, and always scary. The origins are really, literally lost in the midst of time.
Monsters descended on Bloomington's Beeline Trail Saturday evening. The annual Krampus Rampage and Bazaar features volunteer performers carrying out the Germanic holiday of Krampusnacht. We'll catch up with Indiana University folklorist Moira Marsh about the origins of Krampusnacht and bring you highlights from Saturday's event later in the program for today's WFHB feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Joy Bhattacharya has dedicated over 60 hours of volunteer work to Wonder Lab alone. Her work with Global Gifts Fair Trade Store, Habitat for Humanity, and Wonder Lab is coming up on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
Over the weekend, U.S. Senate Republicans advanced their proposed tax bill. Votes largely came down along party lines, with Tennessee Senator Bob Corker being the only Republican to vote against the tax bill. On Saturday, 51 Republicans voted to pass the bill, and 48 Democrats voted against it. Reflecting the partisan atmosphere in Washington, D.C., Republican Indiana Senator Todd Young voted in favor of that bill, and Democratic Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly voted against it. Both senators took to social media to broadcast their rationales following the vote. Young praised the passage of the bill, which is currently in committee to finalize changes between its companion U.S. House tax bill before sending a version to President Donald Trump to sign.
This is a big win for Hoosiers. Not only did we repeal the oppressive individual mandate tax of Obamacare, which is part of the larger tax package, but we offered tax reform for the first time in 30 years that will ensure Hoosiers have a code that is fair, that is simpler, and that allows rank and file people from our state to keep more of what they earn. Right now, so many small businesses are paying upwards of half or more of their profits to various levels of government. There's no way to remain competitive against our global competitors when that's happening. So they're going to see a reduction in rates. They're also going to see a real simplification of our tax code. That's something that consistently, as I've traveled around the state over the last 7 years and talked with small business owners, they indicate they want out of a tax code. So 9 out of 10 Hoosiers, in fact, who pay taxes through the standard process are going to be able to take the standard deduction now because we've doubled the standard deduction. And the last thing I would emphasize is Indiana is a major manufacturing state, and so many of those businesses are small and medium sized. And this tax code, once put in place, will incentivize these businesses to invest in more capital equipment so that their workers will be more productive and earn higher wages.
In his statement, Senator Donnelly says he was for the tax cuts, but was unable to get behind the Senate tax proposal.
Hello, I'm U.S. Senator Joe Donnelly. I wanted to briefly speak to you about why I voted against Senator Mitch McConnell's tax hike bill. I believe we need to reform our tax code and cut taxes for the middle class. From the beginning, I've been willing to partner with Republicans, with Democrats, with the president, and with this administration. I agreed with President Trump's stated goals of supporting the middle class and keeping jobs here in America. I strongly believe tax reform can be done in a way that's good for working Hoosier families. Unfortunately, This tax hike bill from Senator McConnell does not reflect the priorities the president and I discussed on numerous occasions, including when I traveled with him on Air Force One to Indiana recently. And that's why I couldn't support this bill. It results in a tax hike for nearly a million middle-class Hoosier families in the coming years, and it fails to address the outsourcing of jobs to foreign countries. In addition, this bill takes away health care and raises costs for millions of families. Here's the bottom line. I oppose Mitch McConnell's bill because it's not tax reform. It's a partisan tax hike on Indiana's middle class. It does nothing to prevent the outsourcing of U.S. jobs to foreign countries, and it's a giveaway to Wall Street and other big money interests.
The committee reviewing both the House and Senate tax proposals is expected to have a finalized comprehensive bill ready in several weeks. President Trump has repeatedly urged lawmakers to pass a tax reform bill by the end of the year.
A small business coalition has been running attack ads against Senator Todd Young for his support of the Senate tax bill. Businesses for Responsible Tax Reform reportedly spent over six figures on television commercials in Indiana. The group has spent more than $1 million on similar ads targeting Republican lawmakers in Tennessee, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, and Arizona. The group is now urging senators to revise tax reform to help aid small businesses. The Businesses for Responsible Tax Reform are demanding a tax reform that benefits the 30 million small businesses and firms in the country. A public opinion poll released by the organization states that a majority of small business owners oppose the tax reform bill. According to that poll, 52% of small businesses think that the bill is harmful to small businesses, and 58% believe the wealthy will profit from the proposals. A majority also rejected the idea of raising the national debt by $1.5 trillion.
Indiana's largest environmental gathering, Greening the State House, drew crowds to Hendricks County Fairgrounds in Danville Saturday. Hoosier Environmental Council Executive Director Jesse Carbanda says this week's turnout was the best in the 10 years the event has taken place. Carbanda was the executive director during the first Greenhouse, the state event, which held 80 people. He says since then, the event has grown significantly.
Greening the State House is the largest annual gathering of environmental advocates in Indiana, and this year we had a record-breaking crowd of about 550 people from all across Indiana.
Carbanda says the goal of the Greening the State House annual event is to build support for the green and environmentally conscious community in Indiana.
Every year we have a theme that is to focus the public's attention on some big topic that we anticipate either dominating the next year or being some kind of an approach that we ought to take to succeed in the coming year. And this year the focus was not so much on a policy issue but rather an approach, and that is that we need to find a way to build an even bigger and wider environmental movement in order to make progress.
Topics at this year's event included how to talk with lawmakers, the media, and communities. Carbanda says the passage of the anti-solar Indiana Senate Bill 309 earlier this year made it clear that the Hoosier Environmental Council needed to help increase political activism and the awareness of Hoosiers.
Part of the lesson that we learned from that experience is that even though we were very successful, along with a number of groups, in mobilizing public opposition against the bill, it was perceived to not be opposition from across the political landscape. And so what we really need to do is find ways to get conservatives and very conservative Hoosiers to be on our side without compromising the basic ideals of meaningful progress for the environment.
Voter turnout is low in Indiana. Carbanda says he believes this is due to people not feeling connected to lawmakers or to legislation.
There's very much a link between kind of the state of Indiana civic health and the importance of events like Greening the State House. We have a long ways to go to getting the public engaged, and I think that events like Greening the State House are absolutely essential because they're very much about trying to make issues accessible in terms of understanding things with accuracy but with clarity. They're also critical because they provide people with the tools they need to be more effective in their communities. And when they're more effective in their communities, not only will they be sustained as active citizens in Indiana, but they'll inspire people around them to get involved.
Involvement in the community is an important step to changing and being a part of public policy. The president of the nationwide Evangelical Environmental Network, Reverend Mitch Hescox, was the headline guest speaker during the 10th annual Greening the Statehouse.
We emphasized bridge building and fostering relationships with conservatives, and our event was headlined by Reverend Mitch Hescox, president of the National Evangelical Environmental Network, which has successfully mobilized evangelicals across the country who, as you know, tend to be very conservative.
Other speakers included retired Indianapolis Star Statehouse Bureau Chief Mary Beth Schneider, Northwest Indiana Federation of Interfaith Organizations Executive Director Jim Poyser, founder of the Ministry Project Eden Greg Osland, and Director of Youth Power Indiana Reverend Cheryl Rivera. More information about the Hoosier Environmental Council, Greening the Statehouse, and the Council's political activities is available on the group's Facebook page. The Indiana General Assembly reconvenes in early January.
Indiana University School of Public Health Professor Dr. Debbie Herbenick is hosting the 22nd Annual Sex Salon tonight. Herbenick specializes in sex research and education. She says the salon is a community-based series discussing sex research and education with guest speakers every month.
The Bloomington Sex Salon is an event series that's designed to foster campus community conversations about sex. So interviewing various guests from sex research, education, art, or advocacy about their work.
The guest speaker for this month's Sex Salon is the author of Girls and Sex on the Topic of Power, Pleasure, and Intimate Justice, Peggy Orenstein.
Peggy Orenstein's most recent book is called Girls and Sex, and for that book, she interviewed a number of adolescent and college students about their sexual lives. So for this topic, we'll be talking a lot about that book, about what Peggy learned from both her interviews with young women themselves, as well as her interviews with scientists who study young women's sexuality. And we'll talk about her current work, which is that she's working on a similar book, but about young men and sex. And we'll learn what she's learning through her interviews.
The event will take place at the Bishop Bar and Music Venue at 8 p.m., and Herbenick says time will be given after the talk for a Q&A session with the audience and Orenstein. Herbenick says future topics for the year include birth and sexual health.
February, we have Professor Sarah Knott, who's a history professor at IU and does fascinating work on birth. And in March, we have Billy Avery, who is the founder of the Black Women's Health Initiative, about her work about really starting and leading this national movement related to African American women's health issues, including sexual health. And then we're working on guests for April forward, but it should be a really exciting year in 2018.
Information on future guest speakers and events can be found on the Bloomington Sex Salon's Facebook page.
IU Health fired a nurse after she tweeted that white women should, and I quote, sacrifice their sons to the wolves. The employee came under fire after her post on Twitter circulated around social media. News of the post reportedly triggered an investigation by IU Health's Human Resources Department. The investigation into the nurse's social media activity reportedly revealed a pattern of similar posts. The original Twitter account was deleted. The nurse, who worked in the pediatric unit in an Indianapolis hospital, was fired. Many employment contracts contain clauses meant to limit what an employee may post on social media. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Michael Glab.
And I'm Jada Lucas.
The Krampus is a mythological beast that punishes wicked children during Christmas time. But to IU folklorist Moira Marsh, the Krampus is so much more.
I summon the Krampus from the netherworld to help me up on my rounds on Christmas Eve. Those kinder, the children who are nice, they get presents and treats, and those who are naughty, that's the Krampus. They get switches, and the naughtiest of the naughty get taken away, never to be seen again.
So I'm Moira Marsh. I am a folklorist and I am the librarian in charge of the folklore collection at Indiana University Libraries. Well, it's a demonic figure. It goes by many different names in different places. Krampus is just one of the names that he has. In all the variants that exist, he's always the companion of St. Nicholas. So he's like the dark side of St. Nicholas, if you like, or the demonic side of St. Nicholas, or the mirror image of St. Nicholas. So where St. Nicholas goes from house to house on St. Nicholas Day, which is December the 6th, I think, on December the 6th, he goes from house to house bringing gifts for the good children. Krampus comes along and delivers punishments for the bad children. Every version that I have seen, it's a he. He's related to, in the Netherlands, he's known as Black Pete, Bartzer Pete. So he's similarly the companion to St. Nicholas, but is always in blackface, but has the same role. Well, as I say, it goes along with the popularity of St. Nicholas Day. So St. Nicholas was a Christian bishop in what's now Turkey in the 4th century, and the legends about him probably started then, but they became really popular in Europe in the 11th century. And so St. Nicholas Day, the version with the accompanying customs and house visits, probably became most popular then. And so Krampus, I think the origins of Krampus come right along with that. Going back any further in time, you really are speculating. Probably has roots in pagan mythology, but there's no specific pagan figure that you can point to and say that's Krampus. And over time and in different places, he picks up different attributes. Many of them clearly very demonic. So most Krampus masks and figures that you see, they have horns and they carry pitchforks. They carry, as you say, switches, lumps of coal. Sometimes they have blackened faces. Sometimes they have dressed in sort of rough kinds of fur or straw or very rough sort of costumes, and always scary. The origins are really literally lost in the mists of time. Well, that's the ostensible purpose, is to frighten children into obedience. And there are many, many folkloric figures who play that role. They tend to play it at this time of year, going into the winter season. And it tends to be associated with some sort of traditional house visit custom. The Krampus Nocknow, the Krampus Lauf, is more of a parade, but it was originally in a local setting, groups of people going from house to house to either hand out gifts or to scare the willies out of small children. But it was a way of building community and in small communities, because the people who were dressed up as Krampus and St. Nicholas would have been known to the people that they were visiting. So that's the ostensible purpose, then, is to scare children into obedience. You could argue that there is a more unconscious purpose, which is to acknowledge that there is always a dark side. St. Nicholas is kindly and gives gifts and saves lives and so forth, but there is another side, dark side, to the supernatural. The supernatural is always powerful. It's great if the supernatural is on our side and doing good, but it could just as easily be against us and be evil as well as good. So acknowledging the dark side and to the light side of our customs is an important thing to do. And it's interesting to me that Krampusnacht probably died out in the very early 20th century in Europe, and it has only very recently been revived around the world, and revived quite consciously. And I think it's a reaction to the over sort of sentimentalization of Christmas. It's the beginning of the Christmas season. Santa Claus and the whole Christmas mythology that has developed, especially in the United States, has become so saccharine that even Americans are beginning to get a bit sick of it. And so this is the antidote to that. In one of his other names in Switzerland, he's known not as Krampus, but as Teufel, which is from the German Teufel, devil. So sometimes he's just called the devil.
You had mentioned a little bit of this resurrection of the Krampus and Krampus traditions as a pushback kind of to the sentimentality and the quote-unquote goodness and charity of the holidays. Is there any research to suggest that that may be the case?
That it really is speculation on my part, but it does link with what folklorists know about folk traditions generally. It applies, for example, with disaster jokes and humor. It's a pushback and a resistance against the media-controlled version of a public event, or in this case, a calendar custom. The media's been telling us all of our lives that, you know, Christmas is supposed to be like this, and it's a happy time of year. Many individuals, in fact, experience the Christmas season as anything but a happy time of year. If you come from a dysfunctional family, or if you have bad memories associated with the season, it's very much the opposite of what the media tells us it's supposed to be. One folklorist, Sue Sanderson, she came up with the term holiday malaise to describe this feeling that many people have because for whatever reason their personal experience or their personal feelings about the holiday don't match the media image. And so Krampus and the revival of Krampus it falls into this category of folk pushback against what the culture at large tells us a holiday is supposed to be. But around about 2012, I think, is when it was revived in Bloomington.
Moira Marsh, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Yep, you're very welcome.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
And now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
Hi, my name is Joy Bhattacharya, and I volunteer with Global Gifts.
I'm 14, and currently I am a freshman at Bloomington North, but I actually started the summer after I graduated middle school. It's a great opportunity for people like me who can't really have jobs. It's a really valuable business experience, like with the register and interactions with customers. So we're a fair trade store, which means we offer impoverished artisans, usually in third world countries, fair prices for the products that they make. We're always very on top of informing people of what our mission is and that we're a fair trade store. Before I came here, I kind of thought or assumed that if you're really talented, you shouldn't be poor, right? But a lot of these people are extremely talented, and you know, they're not really reaping the benefits of their talent. And so that kind of opened my mind to a new mindset that I could always help, because there are a lot of unfair things going around in the world.
I really like this business because it empowers other people. We empower other artists who are so talented, yet for some reason or another, they're poor. And I really like helping them. That feeling of satisfaction comes from helping people break the poverty cycle. And so that's what really inspired me to work here.
I just really love the feeling of when people buy a product, you can see firsthand, oh, this money is going to help people that are really in need.
Thanks for listening. I'm Joy Bhattacharya, and I volunteer at Global Gifts.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three featured volunteer opportunities for the week. Bloomington Transit and its partners WCLS Radio and the Salvation Army are challenging everyone to help stuff a bus with toys to make the holidays brighter for Monroe County children and families in need. Volunteers are needed to host the bus for two-hour shifts at its various locations. Or become an ambassador, a trail ambassador, that is, to either the Beeline Trail, Bloomington Rail Trail, Clear Creek Trail, or Jackson Creek Trail. Trail ambassadors make a one-year commitment to visit their assigned trail weekly and note any concerns to share with the Parks Department. Apply before December 29th. And finally, spend a few hours on the second Friday of each month to assist the Monroe County Women's Commission record their meetings. Learn more about the community and issues of importance to women. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Alex Davis, Robert Goldkamp, and Wes Martin. Our feature was produced by Jan Walker, Cindy Bowley, and Wes Martin.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake of the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Michael Glab.
And I'm Jada Lucas. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have the show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Now stay tuned for Kiteline, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.